It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber along with Jim Cramer, and we are live from the New York Stock Exchange. Carl has the morning off. Let's give you a look at futures as we get ready to start the trading for this week. Half hour from now, you can see we are headed for what is going to be a down open. And that's where our roadmap starts as well, as you might expect, on the geopolitical risk for stocks. Futures, as you just saw, pointing to what would be a second straight drop at the open. Plus, oil on the rise. Gold also nears a seven-year high. This, of course, as tensions in the Middle East are very high. Also, a new chapter for U.S. cosmetics giant Avon. It's now part of the Brazilian personal care group Natura. The group's new CEO is going to join us later this hour. Back to stocks. They are extending a sell-off while oil and gold prices continue to climb. This is Iran and the White House. Trade threats following, of course, that U.S. airstrike that killed Iran's top commander. Jim, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Nice to see you,
Good
my
to see
friend.
You, buddy. Way too long.
I missed you. I know you feel the same. But I haven't heard you opine on this market and what risk there is in the geopolitics, in the back and forth. Our viewers, I'm sure, are familiar with the president's tweets over the last, let's call it 24 to 48 hours, sort of saying we've identified 52 sites that we would take action against if, in fact, you do something, and also notifying the Congress, he said as well, that if Iran should strike any U.S. person or target, we would quickly and fully strike back, perhaps in a disproportionate manner. What do you make of all of it when it comes to the lens through which our viewers need to understand and view things, namely what it means for the economy and the stock market more specifically?
All right. Economy, not much. You know how I always say that what does this have to do with the price-earnings ratio of Bristol-Myers? Right. Nothing. But in terms of timing, David, why aren't the futures down more? I think they should be. And I think they should be because we haven't seen what promises to be retaliation. Unless Iran is I don't think Iran is a paper tiger, but do they not have to do something after all the bluster?
I don't know. And that, of course, continues to be a question as to how and when they will respond. It doesn't mean they have to immediately. Will it be through cyber, of course, in which the Iranians are fairly adept?
I've been working with
will
that.
Will it be in other asymmetrical ways that we talk about as you read some of the other things that the president tweeted as well?
You know, look, I had CrowdStrike on last Friday. That's the natural one. They know more than anyone, I think, when it comes to global threats to the cloud. They indicated clearly this would be the way that Iran could respond. Do I want to go buy a lot of stocks right now? Why don't we listen to what the guy said from CrowdStrike? He's a pretty smart fellow.
Yeah, let's take a listen, of course. Mr. Kerr, CEO, you had him on Mad Money, as you say, of course, and as Jim points out, cyber is certainly one of the key areas that people are watching very closely, including the Homeland Security, DHS, Department of Homeland Security as well. Here he is from last Friday.
These sort of determined adversaries, nation-state adversaries, are constantly attacking our corporations and critical infrastructure 24/7. And most people really don't understand the extent of these attacks and the damage that they can actually inflict.
Right. Yeah, that's the world we live in. You know. And in fact, I've made this point, Jim, which is that if you talk to CEOs, I know you do the same. In fact, sometimes we do it together. They will talk about the first threat they see. The most significant threat that they worry about is cyber.
Absolutely.
Largely, broadly and for their own companies as well.
And look, Iran plays in it. North Korea plays in it. China plays in it. I mean, obviously, you have to expect Iran to step up. David, how about this theory?
Yeah.
Maybe people are more sanguine because of the Biden factor. That if there are people who are worried about big insecurity because of Iran, does it not make the seasoned Democrat the obvious leader versus Trump?
Very much unclear. Biden supported the invasion of Iraq.
Well, I'm just saying he's a known quantity.
Right.
There's enough for me to believe that, this is going to sound a little strange, but I think Iran wants Biden to win. Look, I know that
we are now officially in an election year.
Oh, so you're now finally we're allowed to talk about it?
We are actually getting really close to the Iowa caucuses. All that said, when it comes to this and what we can expect or not, and listen to all of the experts that will come on in various places, Jim, I mean, the price of oil is one place you can see it.
Long term, still no movement.
No?
No.
And then you seem to think that there is more risk in this market than is currently reflected by the move that we've seen thus far since the
killing. Up 30% last year. Okay.
Yeah.
David, if you told me that there could be something errant with a couple of major companies, I would say, listen, let's take profits. Where is the take profit? I mean, are people that brain dead? It's up huge. Why not use... Don't you think some funds are going to use this as an excuse?
Yeah, but you know, the geopolitics rarely seems to have a take a true dent out of things unless you're talking about all-out war.
And even then, people say, oh, buy at the sound of cannons.
Yeah.
Look, can we be so Panglossian that it really doesn't matter? No. Right. Something matters.
Of course, it matters, but does it matter... Again, we're CNBC. Does it matter to the markets, to the way that CEOs go about making decisions?
Oh, okay.
Does it matter there?
I think that you have to expect that there will be people who say there's too much uncertainty, so maybe they'll cut back on capital expenditures. That's the usual rap.
Right.
I'm tired of that rap.
Yeah.
I mean, people buy the drug stocks.
If you get some sort of debilitating cyber attack from Iran... And one would expect that would certainly resonate or reverberate.
Okay, let's
just say.
But how much World War III talk did you hear this weekend?
A lot. I mean, you
know,
the search for the draft, people that skyrocketed. Will there be a draft? It's frightening in some ways, without a doubt. But meanwhile, we have a decent economy. We've got a 10-year where right now? Below 180?
I was looking at Eli Lilly versus the 10-year.
Yeah.
Because that's what people do. They look at Eli Lilly. Oh, they look at Merck. Look at Pfizer. They like AbbVie merging with Allergan. I mean, look, that's what they do.
Yes.
When I say they, I'm talking about big money. Right now, it's trying to say, you know what? Let's hold off on Boeing, but let's buy the drug stocks. And the only reason I'm saying buy is because you could expect the futures to be down huge. I mean, there's a lot of people who feel like we're going to war.
There are. There's a lot of concern.
This is
about
so
it.
Garden variety, David. We would be down this much on, I don't know, downgraded. We had one downgrade of Apple, but I'm just saying, some
Ricky Gervais, I think, downgraded Apple in the Golden Globes.
David. He kept the hold rating, but
he cut
his price target.
Oh, he cut his price target.
Yeah, you got it. He's more sophisticated than that.
He may be. All right, let's get a little bit more on the tensions, of course, between the U.S. and Iran. For that, let's go to NBC News Tehran's bureau chief correspondent Ali Arazi, who is in, as we said, the Iranian capital of Tehran. Good morning.
Good morning. That's right. Well, Qasem Soleimani's procession took place this morning. It was a huge affair. It was punctuated by a lot of passion, a lot of anger amongst the crowds who were screaming for revenge. They were chanting death to America throughout the procession. When the Iran Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei read the prayers for Qasem Soleimani, His voice was trembling. He was crying. Those are scenes that have never been seen here before in Iran. And a lot of people have interpreted that as how harsh he wants to exact his revenge on the United States for taking out his right-hand man. And we have been hearing a lot of calls for revenge in Iran, from the very top, from the Supreme Leader to the man who has stepped out of the shadows and replaced Qasem Soleimani, a man called General Ghani. He says that the only revenge that would suit Iran is to expel all U.S. troops from this region. Now, Iran has a whole host of choices available to it for revenge, but they're biding their time. For the Iranians, revenge right now is probably a dish best served cold. Iranians don't want to probably get involved in a conventional war with the United States because they're no match for the might of the military that the U.S. has. But Iran has mastered its skills in asymmetrical warfare. Qasem Soleimani had built up a very powerful network of militias scattered across this entire region that are all very close to U.S. assets. And the Iranians have said time and time again that U.S. bases are within immediate striking distance of their own forces hand of their proxies. And I was listening to you guys talk a little earlier. Cyber attacks is something Iran have also honed their skills on. They may not be as sophisticated as the Chinese or the Russians, but they're not far off. They are quite technically savvy when it comes to cyber technology. So they are sitting here, they're mulling all of their options. But restraint does not seem to be in the appetite here. When I was at the funeral this morning, there was a reformist member of parliament walking through the crowds, and hardline elements in that crowd were screaming at him, jeering at him, swearing at him, just because he had a softer tone. There was another member of parliament here that had called for restraint, and his office was attacked by hardliners today. So a lot of tension and a lot of passion here in Iran right now.
Ali Arouzi in the Iranian capital for us, of course, monitoring those continued protests. And as well, of course,
Trump's not going anywhere, is he?
Say again?
Trump's not pulling anybody out.
No, we've added what we called up 3,500
He didn't care about what the Iraqi Congress is doing.
Well, he wants them to pay for the, we get out, he wants them to pay for the...
Mainstream media, David, airfield. Is acting as if these are separate countries, that Iran is separate from Iraq. Iraq is now a client state of Iran. Let's just call it as we see.
That is true. That is the outcome of our invasion of
Iraq. Well, we can't now reinstate
something
a Sunni
that we lost
regime.
Thousands of men for, spent trillions of dollars on. And at the end of the day, our...
We created a client state
for our worst enemy. Yeah, that was... Which goes to foreign policy in the United States, which we do not have time to sit in here and discuss in terms of all the mistakes that have been made and whether more mistakes are being made.
But you know what? Maybe that's the most important takeaway. Like, we're sitting here all feeling, wow, we really screwed up, our country's in trouble, blah, blah, blah. No! We made some mistakes that played out really badly that obviously... Do you think that anyone... It almost seems like Iran was waiting for this. They were so ready. Iraq was so ready that we come in today and we just say, all right, retaliation, here it comes. Don't buy yet? I don't know.
All right. Well, there it is. We're looking at futures that are going to open.
David,
what
can I come back? Why aren't we down more?
I don't have an answer for you.
The answer is that we're going to be down more.
We're going to get back to stocks in a moment, specific ones, in fact. We're also going to talk to Continental Resources founder Harold Hamm, give us the latest on the oil market, certainly, and the effect of these tensions on oil prices.
Is he ever bearish?
No. Not really.
Well, good.
Things were always good.
Always good.
Even when he had to write that $999 million check.
Even better.
Up next, though.
Been there.
We're going to have $999 million?
Wasn't that good
for Karen?
Divide it by... Stop it.
All right.
Well, I brought it up.
Counting down to the opening bell. We'll give you another look at futures, by the way. As you saw, we are going to open lower. A lot more squawk on the street, straight from where we are right now, which is the New York Stock Exchange. All right, welcome back to Squawk on the Street. We got started with trading here at the NYSE 15 minutes from now. Let's start talking a bit more about stocks this morning. Nokia is a name that has appeared for you. Why?
Right. This one has been a disaster. Okay. Why is it a disaster? Because they're competing against Huawei. They've got the high price, not as good 5G. But today, Raymond James says it's finally right. Now, David, the rationale, I love darkest before dawn. Well, I mean, yeah, that's absolutely true. Well, some people say darkest before over.
By the way, when you take a look at a 20-year on this, when they were dominant, do you remember at the turn of the century?
Oh, my God.
Before Apple had an iPhone, obviously, yeah. There we go. Look at that.
Well, this is when we thought it was a telco company. This is when we realized it was a river in Finland. Now, what matters to me, David, is that they actually say good cash flow after ceasing dividend. They like that. They take the estimates down. They say the business isn't that good. Buy! I don't know.
I don't know.
I think that people, David, in the end, they love a $3 stock, and that's why I mentioned it. They'll be all over it. David, I love days like today. People come out, recommend this. I was waiting for a Tesla,
upgrade,
hold to buy.
Yeah.
Pretty much roaring. I don't know. it is it's a great spec if you truly believe that they have some technology, because the world wants an alternative to Huawei.
Right. And we're not talking about handsets any longer. We're talking about
infra,
the equipment.
5G.
For, right.
5G, by the way, just so we're sure.
Understand.
5G is an unstoppable force in an era where Iran hates us. It just doesn't matter. 5G trumps that. Ooh, Trump.
Yeah, 5G is something we'll be spending a lot of time talking about.
Right, I'm doing a series
in this decade.
Tonight, series of things that can't be stopped by Iran.
Okay, I like it.
You like that?
Yeah.
I just thought of it.
Well, something else that can't be stopped is this show. We got a lot more. By the way, be sure to check us out on our podcast. You can listen to the opening bell hour of Squawk on the Street.
I got to lose weight. I got to do this Weight Watchers, Planet Fitness. Oh, I have Planet Fitness on tonight.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they got 20 cent deal.
Wait, you looked at your picture and decided you need to?
Yeah, I look thinner. It's before all those soft pretzels.
All right, we're going to be right back. A lot more Squawk on the Street straight ahead. Let's look at futures as we get ready to open trading 10 minutes from now. As you can see, we're going to have a down open, opening bell 9 minutes away. You're watching CNBC Squawk on the Street. We're live from the financial capital of the world. We're going to have an opening bell 6 minutes from now, which gives us plenty of time to talk about what we can expect, of course, when we do begin trading. Something I like to turn to Jim and ask him when our colleague Carl's not here is what you see is the key to this market, sort of one of the stocks, at least, that will dictate kind of broader trading other than its own.
I'm going to use Citi.
Now,
I could have easily defaulted Apple, Needham took it from strong buy down. No, Citi.
Okay.
Deutsche Bank goes buy to hold. Goldman goes buy to conviction buy. So let's just talk about what the market really likes. I mean, if the market is really going to be negative, then Citi's going to be off from the Deutsche Bank, Paul. And if the market is as sanguine as it appears, then maybe Citi is the one to buy. It's cheap. It's been the best performer in the group.
Coming off a year in which it had a great performance.
Great performance. Mike Corbett doing a good job. So, I don't know. I mean, look, I could have defaulted to Apple. That would have been very easy. But I like the Citi call as a way to figure out what the market's going to do. And if Citi's down a lot, then it says, you know what? There's no reward here. And there's too much risk.
Interesting. Citi figures prominently in another story, one that you know I've been following closely, Jim, and we've talked a lot about, which is Xerox's continued attempts to, right now, to just get Hewlett-Packard to the negotiating table is really what it amounts to. Significant development this morning. The reason I mentioned Citi is because it is the lead in what is a $24 billion financing package that Xerox has secured.
Right.
To back its bid. Right now, remember, $22 a share, 17 of that is in cash. You need to raise, obviously, debt to pay that for HP. Now, 22, is that really going to be enough to sway HP shareholders? Probably not,
no.
But one would expect that is why they've got $24 billion in financing. $5 a share of it, of course, is in stock. We'll see where and if they end up at a higher number. Right now, though, they're simply trying to get HP to the negotiating table. They have the financing. They are paying commitment fees, real money for it, which is always a question mark in battles like this. Oftentimes, the company that is sought will say, hey, you know, right now all you've spent is used to be postage stamp money, because all you've done is send us a letter. These days, they don't even have to spend that because you just send
it electronically.
But, David,
look, the obvious people are going to say, wait a second, and one's an $8 billion company, one's a $20-plus billion.
Yes.
How can an $8 billion company buy a $20-plus billion company? No, people are saying,
yeah.
Is that even possible?
Yeah, and it is. It is possible. Of course, it would be essentially a leveraged buyout.
Right.
You, of course, are using in part the cash flow being acquired from HP to repay the leverage being taken on to buy it. At the same time, if shareholders of HP, and this is the key here, right? Remember, John Visentin, the CEO of Xerox, has been engaged in talks with their shareholder base at HP. And if there is a willingness on their part to take some sort of a premium, largely in cash, but also own roughly 50%, it would be about 48% or so of the combined company, because they believe he'll be able to run it better than current management, Jim, you can get it done. You can get it done. Now, will HP come to the table? Very much unclear. What are they hearing from their shareholder base? What are other directors as well beyond their CEO, such as Chip Berg?
How about Chip?
Or Dob Bennett, important members of that board.
Is Chip
from
distracted?
Those shareholders?
Is Chip distracted?
I don't know.
Huge Niner fan. Going all the way.
He may
against
be.
Baltimore.
Those are questions, but you know what? The time is ticking away here because the window by which Xerox can act to put up a slate of directors to challenge the current slate for the annual meeting that will take place later this year. It's going to close a few weeks from now. I think it's Jan 25 or something like that. It's been open as of Christmas. Here's what they had to say, by the way. We've always maintained our proposal is not subject to a financing contingency, but in order to remove any doubt, we have obtained binding financing commitments. They're not subject to any due diligence. Or anything else. And then you see Citi, Mizuho, Bank of America behind that. By the way, I'll tell you, these commitments extend beyond the shareholder meeting. They are subject only to the usual material adverse change clauses that you get, but nothing beyond that. So they're paying real money for their financing. They seem to be serious.
Is there a bigger read-through here? What the heck are they doing getting this financing so easily? Does that worry you?
No, not necessarily. I mean, the company will be, you know, the question, will it really be investment grade? Can it maintain an investment grade rating if it's getting up towards 5x? That's a reasonable question. By the way, people close to Xerox indicate to me they believe they have other ability to raise money as well. Don't forget Darwin Deason and Carl Icahn, who say they will roll their equity into the new, into a new HP Xerox if, in fact, it occurs. Is there an ability to do some sort of preferred or some other type of financing as well as they continue to try to raise money in need of potentially a higher price? But right now, you've only got one party at the table, the other one not willing to give diligence to Xerox,
right,
and not willing to talk, simply saying it's not enough. Will this change matters? We'll see.
When is the CEO or the chairman from Hewlett Packard going to come to HP, come out and say, hey, listen, we're not interested, and if anything, we'll buy you if we are?
We don't know. And by the way, this makes it less likely that you'd see a reverse,
right,
reverse takeover Packard strategy. The one they seem more likely, frankly, given the respective sizes of the two companies.
Let's go inside the board right now, HP. Are they sitting there saying, we're scared? Are they scared?
I don't know. All right, there's an opening bell for this Monday, of course. You can see our real-time exchange back at our headquarters. We're going to have a lot more red on that board of the S&P 500. Here at the big board, we mentioned it earlier, Naturitz and company celebrating its IPO. We're going to speak to the company's CEO, Roberto Marquez, a little while from now. Over at the NASDAQ, WW International, that's formerly Weight Watchers.
Right.
Doing the honors. You may have seen Mindy Grossman, the company's CEO, was on the with the Squawk Crew earlier. All right, Jim, what's caught your attention this morning beyond Citi in terms of the key to this market? Obviously, we see, broadly
gold,
speaking, a
gold,
down market.
Gold. You know, when I see this endless buying of gold, it makes me think, for the first time, maybe people are just saying, I am really fearful. It's not just treasuries. The gold buying has been endless, David. Over and over and over. There are only a few growth gold companies. The main one is Agnico Eagle. People want to buy. That's the one to buy. But it's relentless, and it feels like gold wants to go to 1,700, 1,800. You know, that would be very, very negative for the market.
Yeah. Gold and oil and rates are certainly three key things that we're watching. Oil is up, gold is up, rates are down a bit as well.
But what's interesting, you know, there was a piece this morning, Mike Chappell-Truss owns Schlumberger. There was a piece this morning I found quite negative about Schlumberger. Basically saying, listen, it's not happening. Estimates are too high. With oil up the way it is, Schlumberger is down dramatically from its highs. Long curve. Oil's not going up. Stay in the low 50s.
Right.
So the short term, it's up big. Long term, no real change. And that's because American companies keep dumping on the futures because they have liquidity problems. So I cannot
explain that to people.
Okay, so there's a way, if you're an American oil company.
And we are the largest single producer of oil in the world.
Yes, we're the swing producer, which is why oil hasn't gone to 80, 90. If you're an American oil company, your balance sheet is most likely stressed. The only way to be able to convince Wall Street that you're really in okay shape is to sell forward and get the cash in. Meaning, look, we'll make a promise to deliver oil out 5 years from now if you give us money. That then makes their balance sheets look better. And then that makes it so that they're not going to lose their credit grade. But it also makes them pathetic.
And it makes them pathetic. Why?
Because there's no earnings growth.
Right.
They've sold their earnings growth. Even an outfit like Pioneer, which I like so much, the great grower.
Although they could say, well, we've hedged ourselves effectively.
But I don't want some,
maybe we can bring the cost of production even lower. And
well, they are. The rig count's been going down. One of the things is, you know, rig count comes out on Friday. It's Baker Hughes. And it's been going down, 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 down. But production hasn't gone down. But that's because of productivity.
Right.
I'm just saying, David, in 1990, Schlumberger would be at 80. It's at 40. Telling.
Yeah,
we'll talk to
Harold Hamm later as well, get his take. Of course, as you say, he's always positive.
I mean, David, Chevron's up 15 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I know.
Should be up $15. What the heck? Mike Worth's good.
Well, in the world of 25 years ago, yeah, because we're not the swing producer. Now it's really just as much about the Permian as anything else.
The Permian is just, there's a lot of pieces today about pipelines.
Yeah.
Not even that positive. Can you imagine? We've got the renaissance of American oil, and no one's making any money off of it. Isn't that incredible?
That's got to change, doesn't it?
Too many companies, too much money.
You get the consolidation that's required.
I've been waiting for the consolidation.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for pipelines to combine. Well, WMB's done some combining. ETP has done some combining. But it just hasn't paid off. I'm discouraged.
Shares of Apple are still up for the year. A little more than half of 1%.
Is it an ecosystem?
Down. Well, if we had this, I did reference earlier Ricky Gervais, sort of kiddingly, but he did have some rather negative things to say about the company when he opened up the Golden Globes last night with a bit of a roast, as I said, tearing into newcomers to the Hollywood scene, including, of course, the streaming services, such as Apple. Take a listen.
Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show, a superb drama, yeah. A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything.
Also, Sacha Baron Cohen, who you've pointed out any number of times, his very important speech of roughly a month ago or so.
Yeah, ADL.
He made a very brief but significant reference to Mark Zuckerberg. Take a listen.
The hero of this next movie is a naive, misguided child who spreads Nazi propaganda and only has imaginary friends. His name is Mark Zuckerberg. Sorry. This is an old intro for The Social Network. I'm actually talking about Jojo Rabbit.
Wow. How hated.
Say again.
Overly hated.
Meanwhile, everybody, you know, I was asking this question as last year ended of all these analysts. They uniformly were positive on Facebook's business. They don't believe that it will face significant pressure or significant enough to hurt its business in any number of areas, despite this being an election year, despite the fact that we can fully expect it will be under the microscope yet again in terms of influence and how it is influenced and the whole free speech question that he's raising there in terms of how they treat their platform and the willingness to allow anybody to more or less say anything.
Well, look, I mean, Facebook's been under a lot of fire. The stock's done great.
Right.
One of the reasons is like, it's beginning to lose its luster. I mean, I listen to those jokes, and I say, like, all right, enough already. Tim Cook is the highest do you think anyone pays people higher in China than Tim?
No, I think that's unfair.
Supposed to pay them $18 an hour?
Yeah, that's probably.
Listen, I want to, I'm going right to the president unfair. And saying, President Xi, and saying, listen, you guys pay him $5 an hour? I'm going to pay 18. I mean, we're now at the point where it's not funny. That's stupid.
Well, I don't know. The description of Zuckerberg was kind of funny. Come on. It was. I mean, It's never funny when you're talking about the Holocaust, but otherwise. Nazi's not funny.
That's my
point. We can agree on that.
That's my point. You don't reference it. I mean, that's people need people outside.
But he's not trying to be funny. He's trying to point to the fact that he believes that this is a platform that allows hatred to be spewed by all and everywhere.
No disagreement.
Actually being used.
No disagreement.
With significant negative consequences.
David,
and he's not alone in that, Jim. And there are plenty of members of Congress on both sides who tend to agree. The question is whether anything will ever come of it.
David, how much money does Congress have under management versus the buyers? Listen, I know people say that Stalin didn't say how many divisions does the Pope have. I think he did to Churchill. But David, Alphabet's up, okay? It's up because Congress doesn't have a lot of money. I am saying that this is all in a vacuum. We're about to go into earnings season. And who's going to have the best earnings year over year? Fang. Fang.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Most
and then
likely.
There's another whole group. Retail is supposed to get clobbered here, right? Is it supposed to be clobbered?
Every year.
It's not going down.
Every year. Parts of retail get clobbered, and parts of, as we pointed out, did extraordinarily well last year.
But look, most of the people at home who are watching us are saying, does the market not care at all about what's happening in Iran? Right? Because this is a pretty sanguine reaction. It's like barely down.
We've got the S&P down 0.44% right now after a lot of back and forth that certainly didn't do anything to dissuade anybody from feeling that we're getting closer to conflict, not further away from
it. But is there anyone at home who feels that Iran isn't going to do anything?
I don't know. I'm sure there are people who feel that
way. The market
says they're not. Who believe that they will not respond.
But every mainstream media says they will. And the market's saying, forget about it, just go buy. Where's the fear? Shouldn't there be more fear?
Right.
That's my point.
Jim, it's an interesting point you make. Let's move on to some other news. Not that much corporate news this morning. We do have Yum buying a small burger chain, Habit.
Yeah, I spoke to...
You know these guys?
Yes, I do. And I had the good fortune to be able to speak to David Gibbs this morning, new CEO.
Okay.
This is one of those lifestyle brands. I mean, I've not been to one. There are three in New Jersey. You and I will have to go. But you and I never do it anyway. So
no, we don't.
Put that out.
We just talk about it. But
I do think that this is one of those... It's a test case.
Right.
To say, listen, maybe we ought to do this with burgers. David, I'm a Beyond Meat guy if it comes to burgers.
Are you?
Which is doing quite well. But this is just one of those chains that Yum is so big. Make an experiment. Maybe the franchisees say yes. David, Yum versus McDonald's. Are they having as good a time at the top at Yum versus the... Did you not feel like that back in your 20s, McDonald's would have been the place to work?
I'll tell you.
Come on!
For those who haven't read it, Jim is referencing a well-reported story in the Wall Street Journal this morning that indicates the level of partying that was taking place in the upper ranks of McDonald's. Including, of course, former CEO Steve Easterbrook, and the fraternizing that was taking place with a lot of heavy drinking and some touching and things of that nature going on amongst apparently top executives. Who knew? It was like Mad Men back
there. The stock's up. What the heck? No one cares about...
Still the 60s back in McDonald's.
But the stock is up. It's the type of stock that normally you would sell.
Well, the new CEO has changed that, apparently. Did he get rid of the cash bar?
Why did we not know about this?
I don't know.
Why did we not know about this party? Why do I pick up the paper and find out about the party culture? Why did you and I know? It's one of the largest fast food companies in the world, and they were having a blast, and we didn't know?
You know, Jim, I didn't. Nobody had mentioned that to me. Nor do you.
They needed Tony West.
Why?
West to come into Uber. Uber had that kind of culture.
Oh, and he sort of reined it in?
Yeah. He caught it. He killed it.
Where's our cash bar?
David.
All right, let's hit Boeing. So hear some cheers here as well. Jim, the story there, of course, is that they may look to raise additional financing. Not that they absolutely need it, but it wouldn't be bad to have.
But the guy who's running the company now is Greg Smith, interim CEO with CFO, totally responsible. I mean, there isn't anyone I know who doesn't feel he has come through this with flying colors, if you can imagine.
It's hard to imagine.
Hard to imagine.
That anybody comes through with flying colors. Dave Calhoun takes over on the 13th, so a week from today.
So could this, I mean, to me, the question is the dividend.
Right.
You can't assure the dividend. would be foolish. I mean, there's a board. The board might say, listen, everything's in play here. So people who are buying the stock have to be concerned that that yield little
is there. What if something does occur with the dividend, what kind of downside do you think there is in the stock? I know it's hard to say. But
look, the stock's barely down. I mean, yeah. The stock isn't even where it was in August of last year. So I think that there's more downside. I don't know. The institutions want this one, too. The institutions are rabid dogs about this. They just keep wanting to buy it.
They're looking to the out years. They don't care what's going to happen this year.
I don't know, David. I just want to know where the party is.
I'll let you know later. Bob Pisani, no, there's no party culture here at NBC or Comp. No.
No, it's just you know what? Home and we work.
I'm going to stop right there.
We go home and we work.
I haven't been doing this for so long. I've been doing it for so long for a reason. I know when to stop talking. Bob Pisani, you start talking now. Tell us what else is moving this morning.
And we know when to start talking here. A modest downside day, but not dramatically so. Standard risk off issues here. Energy up on the upside, semis, banks, transports down, retail a little bit weaker. These are all natural high sensitivity stocks to anything related to global developments. A lot of people discussing what happens when you have these kinds of events like the situation in the Middle East where the Iranian official was assassinated. The important thing here is markets tend to view these events as fairly short term unless they result in something much more serious like a recession. That doesn't happen. CFRA had a note out this over the weekend. The bottom usually happens 22 days after the event. Typically, the S&P 500 is usually down about 5%. And typically about 6 weeks later, it recoups most of the losses. Again, this is not invariably true, but most events don't have long term lasting economic impacts. And that's what matters to the stock market. On retail, we see some weakness over overall today. You'll notice Bed Bath & Beyond is up because they're doing a big sale leaseback for about half of their properties. This is a great idea. The problem is most retailers don't actually own the real estate that they have. Other than that, it would be a very nice idea, very limited. The same situation applies for 2020 as it does in 2019 and 2018. We're facing a real problem with the consumer strong, but little or negative sales growth. You can't open a lot more stores, and there's no path to growth. So very few companies can increase the earnings without growing the stores. We know the companies that can do that, the small handful of groups, the Targets, the Ross stores, the TJX, if you put them up, and, of course, a Bed Bath & Beyond. But those groups are very, very rare out there, and that's why there's a small group of retail winners, and most of them are overall losers. Finally, just want to point out the Santa Claus rally. It did actually happen. We got a modest move to the upside. Not much as we usually do, 1.3%. The important thing is the January barometer. As goes January, so goes the year. Very good accuracy rate, 75% accuracy in the last 60 years. Jim, back to you.
All right, here's a wild one. Thank you, Bob. Brazilian cosmetics company Natura. Now, this is a really hard story to understand, but we're going to get it explained. Officially begins trading on the New York Stock Exchange this morning after closing its acquisition of Avon, making the combined company the fourth largest pure play in beauty. And joining us now in a first on CNBC interview is Natura's executive chairman, Roberto Marquez. All right, Roberto, I got to tell you, I spent a lot of time trying to understand the transaction. Explain it to me.
All right. So, Jim, thanks for having us.
Sure.
David, thanks for having us. Glad to be here. Listen, it's an exciting moment for us, right? This combination, to your point, makes us the fourth largest beauty group in the world. But what's really exciting is this notion that now we have this amazing power to reach over 100 countries with amazing, iconic brands that share some very important things in common.
And that's Avon is the international. People should know that.
Correct.
That's the not the domestic, not U.S.
Correct. The international piece of Avon, which is over 100 countries, plus the Body Shop, that is also present in over 70 countries, 3,000 stores. And then we have Aesop, which is an Australia brand out of Melbourne. And then we have Natura, actually started in Brazil and with a strong presence in Latin America. That's right.
And that's NTCO, for those who want to do it.
Correct.
All right, hand it over to David. I've had the Robinhood people on a couple times on Mad Money.
Right.
When you talk with them, the way that the millennials invest is the first thing they want to know is sustainability.
Right.
If it's good, then they want to know how the company's doing. You have a particular brand of sustainability, B. Talk to us about B.
Yeah. So we are very proud that we are the first, one of the first public traded companies certified as a B Corp. And B Corp means that the company's balance, both the economic, social, and environmental aspects equally. So we call the triple bottom line. It's not just about the economics. And we think about now Natura & Co. and with Avon. Avon has tremendous heritage of social causes, women empowerment, talking about breast cancer, talking about fighting against domestic violence. Then you, together with the Body Shop, that talks about non-animal testing in cosmetic, and we have that now across all the brands in the group. That's very relevant for the millennials.
Roberto, when our viewers hear the name Avon, they think, frankly, about a company that failed. It failed to innovate. It failed to kind of move ahead. And it was bought for a very small price compared to what it had been. What are you doing to reinvigorate Avon? I know the international businesses, obviously, were always the key for it. But nonetheless, we're in a digital age now.
Right.
People are not going door to door to sell these products. What can we expect?
Right. Very good question, David. Listen. You know, Avon, we've been looking at Avon for many, many years, right? Because it's such an iconic brand. It has a household penetration that is incredible. You know, it's unparalleled to any brand. And it's a democratic brand. It's a brand that combines great quality at an affordable price. And we have, you know, an army of representatives, you know, that combined with Natura is over 6.4 million consultants representatives. Now, here's the thing. You know, the direct selling is transforming itself. What we're really exciting about it is those consultants' representatives are becoming micro-influencers. They are using our social media, Instagram, WhatsApp, YouTube, Facebook, to connect with the consumers, to connect with their customers. So think about that the Avon, you know, it's evolving from what I used to call the ding-dong to click-click, you know, in a high-touch, high-tech way. And it's 6 million micro-influencers. That you multiply that by 20, 30 consumers, we are reaching over 200 million consumers on a daily basis through relationship selling.
And what about the retail aspect and the Body Shop? Is there integration that can be done there?
Yeah, so the Body Shop is more retail. But it's interesting that the Body Shop also has direct selling in two markets, UK and Australia. So as you think about this multi-channel opportunity, we think about retail, physical presence, online, relationship selling, and multiple brands. You know, the Body Shop, Aesop, Avon, and Natura brand. Natura brand is a brand, to your point, Jim, very much into millennials. The biodiversity, you know, we source ingredients from the Amazon forest. We have an enormous potential to launch Natura brand outside of Latin America as well, leveraging, you know, the Avon, you know, social platform.
Look, I've got to tell you, I think that there are going to be a lot of millennials who'll just go buy it. Because they say, you know what, this guy cares about the earth or stakeholder. All right, I want to thank you, Roberto. It's really great that you were on.
Thank you. And I would just finish saying, you know, just being the best beauty company in the world is not as aspiration as what we want to be, which is actually to be the best beauty company for the world.
All right. Roberto, thank you.
Thank you.
Nice
thanks for
to
having
see you. Congrats
thank
on the
you.
Listing today.
Yes, congratulations. Thank you.
Squawk on the Street. We'll be right back. All right, there's a look. 1 week of crude, of course. You can see we are up 63.51 right now. But perhaps a move somewhat tempered by production right here in the United States. We're back. Right after this. Welcome back. Time for me to only ask you what's on Mad Money this evening.
Axon, which is Taser, and then Planet Fitness. David, come on. Beginning of the year, we got to get in shape.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. All right.
Good to have you
back. I'll see you then. Thanks.
Facebook's up. So what do they have to do to throw at Facebook?
We'll be talking about that this year.
Maybe he isn't as far.
We'll be talking about that this year.
Maybe he isn't as far.
I don't think he's horrible. My question is judgment.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.